gets it inside. Frank Gore is still going. Touchdown, San Francisco.
Two from the 40. Couple of tight ends. Receiver right and Adrian. Hand off Adrian. Scoots loose up the middle. Across the 30. To the 20. Inside the 10. Touchdown.
First down and 10. Johnson. Gets a shoulder square. Watch out. He's got getting away from the top speed. Touchdown.
Welcome in to episode number 68 of Grinding the Edge here on South Harmon. I'm your host, Koopa, and you can find me on X at Dynasty Koopa and everywhere else at Koopa Troopa 8. If you have not gone to check out the simulator, you absolutely need to go do that on the South Harmon website. All you need to do is to go to southharmonff.com and find the simulator under the tools section. Getting access to the simulator is also going to get you access to the Warp Tool, which I talk about on this podcast all the time. With that one subscription, you get access to both of those, and then also the Owner Report Tool. So definitely go check all of that out at southharmonff.com. This episode, I want to take some time and talk about depth in best ball. A couple weeks ago, I was on the America's Game podcast on this very same network, and I made a side comment that Strength Coach 21 picked up on. He asked me, "You mentioned during the podcast that you thought the best strategy for a best ball auction draft might be picking up one or two good players, then holding your money until players were starting to run out. I was hoping you might go into a little bit more." Well, this is the podcast where I'm going into a lot more than just a little bit. The reason I said that when talking about the strategy that I want to employ in best ball is because of my overarching strategy in best ball and how that kind of plays out in terms of just the points that are generated by your team. My overall strategy, I've said it repeatedly on here, is that I want to have two players for every single starting spot in my lineup. Note the strain that puts on your roster construction compared to a normal lineup league. In a normal lineup league, you only need one player for every single position. So if you have a start 10, then you just need 10 players. Everyone else can be somebody who you are speculatively owning, and you can delve everything else of value into draft capital. Whereas in best ball, I want two for every single position. And oftentimes in our best ball leagues, we find ourselves starting even more people than normal. So that could mean that, hey, we've got a start 12 or start 13 best ball. And I am saying I want 24 to 26 players who I would reasonably feel like, hey, I want to start these guys on a weekly basis. Realistically, I never actually get to that. But the reason I aim for that is because of the math behind how that works out from a Warp perspective, and how that works out from actually winning your games against your opponents. So what I decided to do was go through a startup that I did a couple months ago called The Cookup. If you've been watching The Cookup with T-Rock and Fizzle, you might have seen some stuff about the startup as they talked about it and they introduced it and everything like that. And if you haven't seen anything about it, you should go check it out. It's on the South Harmon Vibes channel on YouTube, and T-Rock and Fizzle, they go on there at least twice a week in order to talk about the things that they're doing in fantasy football. This league was spawned out of their show, and the startup was interesting to say the least, with the first three rounds being rookies and the rest of them being your traditional startup. It kind of makes things a little weird because, you know, you're already having all the rookies of importance drafted when you actually get into drafting your main quarterbacks and running backs and receivers. But I actually kind of liked it from a perspective of, hey, I already knew who I had on my team. And I already knew that when I drafted Cam Ward in that first round, that I had a quarterback position locked down when I'm trying to decide, do I want to get that round one quarterback or pivot to a wide receiver? But the reason that I'm using this league is because there's a pretty clear delineation between some of the teams that decided to go for it and some of the teams that did not. And I have a tool that I developed years ago. It was actually before I even developed the Warp Tool, I developed this, what I called a trade simulator. It's based on the same tech that runs the simulator that is on the South Harmon website right now. And instead, it runs so many more trades, and it has the ability to modify what players are on what team in order to see the impact that those players are going to have on your team if you were to trade them to somebody else. And that was the idea. What is the value of actually getting some other player onto your team? Is it going to help you out, or is it going to hurt? Or is it going to essentially keep you exactly the same and you shouldn't really worry about it? Well, what I decided to do here is to go through the cookup and compare if this was a lineup league and a best ball league. What do these trades look like? How does a trade of going from one player to multiple players actually affect the number of wins that we would expect when you're making these kinds of changes? The reason I decided to use this as well is because we have some teams here that they're designed to be lineup style teams. They don't have a ton of depth. And in this instance, you can kind of showcase a little bit more of what it means to actually have this depth on your team and how impactful that can be going from no depth to having a lot more. So what I decided to do for this is I went on to Dynasty Daddy, because Dynasty Daddy has the cool feature where you can have it recommend trades to you. And I went to a team that's right in the middle of the pack. In this case, it is Fizzle's team. I decided to ask Dynasty Daddy to recommend me some trades based on just trading one player for a couple different assets. The first one I decided to do was to look at trading Travis Hunter. Fizzle has Travis Hunter, and if he trades Travis Hunter for Tyreek Hill, Quentin Johnson, Amari Cooper, and Isaiah Bond. Now, I'm expecting Isaiah Bond to be a zero, but you know, he made it even for what Dynasty Daddy recommended, and I'm just going to stick with it. This, if it for a lineup league, gives a wins improvement value based on my simulator of 0.698. So it means that he gets almost a 70% chance of getting an additional win over the course of a season. Now, this could become even more impactful. This could be less impactful because of injuries and things like that. That's what the simulator accounts for. If we were to change this to a best ball league, however, instead of it being a lineup league where, okay, we're just trading one Travis Hunter and putting in Tyreek Hill most weeks and Quentin Johnson, I guess, is like an extra piece that can fill in here and there. If this is best ball and we just get to choose the best weeks out of those four players, it becomes a 0.823 wins improvement. So it means that we get an additional 0.12 just simply off of it changing from a lineup to a best ball league. We've done nothing else. We haven't changed a single thing. And so this is where best ball, it starts to show what it means to have depth and what that means for how many points end up in your lineup. Think about the difference between three hypothetical players. The first player, he is normally projected to score 15 points. But he's a wide receiver, so he randomly fluctuates between 5 and 25 points. If we have two other players, they're weaker wide receivers. They normally are expected to score 11. But they will fluctuate between 2 points and 20. Well, every single time those wide receivers that are projected for 11 score 20, they're going to make your lineup. It's not that different than the receiver who could score 25. But notably, they can score those 20 points at double the rate. They have two shots to hit that 20. They have two shots to even hit 15 to 20. Compared to the player that player who's better, they only have one shot to hit 15 to 20 every single week. And so if you have these lesser players that are capable of putting up decent enough weeks, they can't be complete scrubs, but if they're capable of putting up decent enough weeks, then they end up actually hitting some of these higher, these, I'll call them lower, higher end values more often. And you are not as variant in terms of your total number of points. What you end up doing is you increase that floor. You need to fill that one lineup spot based off of those two players who average out at 11. Obviously, you would think, hey, I'm going to average out at 11 points. But in actuality, you're going to average out higher, because expectation would be that on any given week, at least one of those players is scoring higher than that average of 11. If it was, say, a 25% chance that they're going to score more than 15 points, that means you would expect that every other week they're going to score more than 15 total points. Which, if you compare that to the player whose average is 15, 50% of the time they're going to score higher than those 15 points, which is the same expectation as those two players. Now, where this comes into effect is on that low end. That player who averages 15 points, if 25% of the time they score less than 10, well, we already talked about how those two players that have the average of 11 points, the expectation is there is not a week where they will be scoring underneath those 11 points. So they're going to, at least a quarter of the time, be scoring more points than that player just based on raw variance of that first player. So if you're expecting that better player to always be in your lineup, you're doing it wrong. You need to have somebody that has such a high floor that it's nigh impossible for that to happen. And that really only happens at the very, very top of the wide receiver room. If you go back to my wide receiver replacement episodes that I did at the beginning of this calendar year, I talked about how when trying to get replacement level for a wide receiver one, it just wasn't even possible. There was no wide receiver who consistently scores a wide receiver one on a week-to-week basis that you can reliably do that with anybody, including Chase, Jefferson, CD Lamb, Puka Nacua, Malik Nabers, all those guys. They can reliably be wide receiver threes or better, but you can't rely on them to just always be filling a wide receiver one spot. You have to play into the variance. And so if you're looking at things that way, all of a sudden, the difference between having, say, one Justin Jefferson or two or three Devonta Smiths looks way different, because those Devonta Smiths could potentially be scoring as many points as Justin Jefferson on any given week because they have that ceiling. And they're not going to struggle with the floors that you might get out of a bad Justin Jefferson week. Like Justin Jefferson, yeah, he might be a wide receiver three. But between three different high-end wide receiver two type players, you're probably going to get at least one who's performing as a wide receiver one that week. And so that's how you end up having a productive best ball team. So in addition to that first trade, I did a couple other ones. The next one that I did was again with Fizzle's team, and again recommended by Dynasty Daddy. In this case, Fizzle has Puka Nacua. I decided to see what would happen if I traded Puka Nacua for Rome Odunze, Rashad Bateman, Trey Tucker, and Darius Slayton. Those are four names that you go to just about anyone, and especially in a lineup league. You offer them those four players, and oof, that's, you got a tough time getting them to move off Puka Nacua for that. Well, in this instance, my simulator did say this is actually an improvement for his team. It's an improvement of 0.26 wins. The reason for this is because Fizzle's team does not have a lot of depth. So a guy like Rashad Bateman or Darius Slayton, who are at the lower end, but they still could fill in a flex spot, is what helped bump that up a little bit. In reality, I would not expect normally that this is a good thing because of the fact that Puka Nacua is so good, and if he gets hurt, you can always trade him. In the simulator, it does not account for this. Keep that in mind if you're using the simulator as well. It does not account for the fact that you can make moves during the season. It just decides everything is static right now. Nothing is going to happen. Whereas some other methods out there might actually take that into account. Now, if I were to take this very same trade and I converted the Cookup League to best ball, this goes from an improvement of 0.26 wins to 0.52 wins. Notice that that increased by an additional 26% of getting a win over the course of the season by making a trade simply because it's best ball. None of these players are guys that you're really hanging on to in lineup leagues. It's like, oh, they're going to be a staple of my lineup. But in best ball, having a lot of these kinds of players can actually help give you a solid floor for your team that makes you very, very hard to beat. I decided to do the same thing on my own team in this league because my team is a pretty strong contender. I tried to find something that objectively looked horrible to me that I would not do because this is a lineup league. So anybody in this league, don't offer me this trade. I will not accept it. But in this case, I decided to go off of one of the Dynasty Daddy recommendations, and it recommended DJ Moore for Rashad Bateman, Joshua Palmer, and Darius Slayton. In this case, because once again, my team doesn't have a ton of depth because it is a lineup league, it increased my chances to win by 0.152. Just giving me that little bit of extra depth, sure, that works out. But if this was best ball, it would be 0.312 wins. Once again, going from one player to three players, simply by changing the type of league from lineup to best ball, it increases the value on the side of the team that's getting the three players by 16%. If you do enough of these moves and you play to this strategy in a best ball league, that's how you're going to end up being able to dominate the league. You can go back to some old 40 chess episodes where Mike and Adam talk about the teams that they built in best ball. And there's one team that Mike built that had every single player who you would think is just a complete scrub. And Adam built a team that was based off of all the studs. Like, all the big names that you would think of in fantasy, they were more or less on Adam's team. But Adam's team also only had those guys. And they did not have any depth behind them. Well, when he went up against Mike's team in the playoffs, Mike's team dominated his. Even though he did not have the same firepower as Adam's team did. And the reason was because of all those players that he had. Even though they weren't the guys that, you know, are sexy lineup ads, they aren't the guys that you're really like, oh, I need to go out and trade for, you know, the third wide receiver on this team. Like, Ray-Ray McCloud, absolute baller in so many best ball leagues. Because those weeks that he did well, great, he got to go on my lineup. The weeks that he didn't, it was fine. He can sit there and ride the bench and somebody else can fill in. It's those kinds of players who end up being your best ball darlings. To give a last talk about what this looks like, especially when you're comparing different sources in terms of how they project the season to go. I'm not trying to trash on Dynasty Daddy here. I think he has a great tool. I just want to point out some limitations that I see in what is provided. In this case, I have a league that is called Call Me Daddy. This is the one that you heard me talk about with that live auction a couple weeks ago. Well, Cody, his team on my simulator comes out is winning the league 38% of the time. That means 38% of the time. Think about how crazy that is. You have 12 teams in the league. You would expect that your chance of winning with any of the 12 teams to be a whole whopping like 8.3%. He has nearly 5x'd that because he just has a team of a ton of scrubs, basically. That's what it feels like when I look at his roster. When you look at it on Dynasty Daddy, because it's looking at it from a lineup lens, his team is the fourth most likely in order to make the playoffs. His fourth most likely for first round bye, fourth most likely to win the finals. It's because Dynasty Daddy does not know how to calculate the effect of what this best ball is doing to his roster and how many points it's going to come out. And so what I want to do is just read through a little bit of what Cody's team is to let you understand just how weird this team can sound to be an absolutely dominant force. He has this amazing quarterback combo of Brock Purdy, Tua Tagovailoa, and Sam Darnold as his quote-unquote starters, and Jackson Dart is maybe a backup. He'll probably come in towards later on in the season, and he'll have four solid quarterbacks, but he can also survive some injuries too. At running back, his top running back is Bucky Irving, but then he has David Montgomery, James Conner, Jaylen Warren, and Javonte Williams. He also has a couple other backup types who might become relevant, but think about those five running backs. Those five running backs, they aren't anybody that you would go, man, they're going to dominate fantasy football this season. Some people might think that for Bucky Irving, but I personally don't think he's going to be somebody you're going to be looking back on and saying, I needed to have Bucky Irving. He finishes a top five running back. I don't think we're projecting that much for him. And if you look at these five players, they're going to give you quite a few weeks that are top five running back weeks. And so what he's just relying on is those guys to come out on top. If you look at his wide receivers, wide receiver one, Puka Nacua. Then it goes all the way down to Davante Adams, Chris Godwin, Cedric Tillman, DeMario Douglas, Christian Kirk, Troy Franklin, Deonta Thornton, Dyami Brown, Darius Slayton, Adam Thielen, Devon Vele, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, and Mac Hollins. That wide receiver room sounds horrendous. If you put this in front of somebody and said, this is a lineup league, and they saw this wide receiver room, they would be like, you have like eight roster-clogging wide receivers. You're going to drop all eight of them and go pick up some backup quarterbacks. Well, with Cody's team, it's built for best ball because we're in a best ball league. And this stable of wide receivers is going to give you multiple amazing wide receiver results every single week. These are the kinds of players that you can build a hyper-competitive team off of. You just need those guys who are going to be out there on 70-plus percent of the snaps. They're probably getting three or four receptions a game. And they might spike up and get six, and they might get two touchdowns, and all of a sudden, now you've got a wide receiver one performance out of some random guy on your team. That's what Cody has. At tight end, he has Trey McBride, David Njoku as his two main tight ends, but then he still has Mike Gesicki, Luke Musgrave, Zach Ertz, and Tyler Conklin. Four guys who are great bets to at least come out and give you some weeks. They might not be anything crazy, but we've seen a tight end. Two catches and a touchdown? Oh boy, they're already at tight end two, maybe even a tight end one if it's a bad week, or if one of those catches was for any amount of significant yardage. So that's what a team can look like, and it be hyper-competitive in best ball. In a lineup league, that team looks horrendous. It's built all kinds of wrong. It has all these players that you do not want to be hanging on to because they are so old. Like, they're your emergency flex kinds of fill-ins. Or they just aren't good enough. And that's, you're holding on to them in hopes that, you know, they might be okay on their team this year. In best ball, that's exactly what you want. And that's my response to that question from Strength Coach 21. When you're looking at a best ball auction draft, you want to have a bunch of depth. Where I screwed up in my iteration of this very same draft where Cody built this amazing team was that I spent a bunch of money early and I had to wait. I could not get those deals when you know, you're sitting there and you're like, hey, I want to get that Adam Thielen. I want to get the Darius Slayton. I want to get the Christian Kirk. Because I didn't have the money to spend the $10 repeatedly 10 times in order to get all those guys. I could not repeatedly get your James Conner, who went for 10 bucks, or your Javonte Williams, who also went that exact same amount, because I could not afford to spend that much on that level of depth. I had to fill out the other 30 spots of my roster, basically. And so I missed out on all those kinds of deals. And so that was my one regret from the auction. And it was a pretty big regret, pretty impactful. But that's why I brought it up. Because if you're doing a best ball auction, 9 times out of 10, waiting for a while, but still getting one or two guys that you like. Notice Cody got Puka Nacua and Trey McBride. Like, those are two high value assets. But just waiting for everyone else to come on the board late, have the big stack towards the end, and then be willing to just spend it all. Get every single player who's coming off the board for, you know, that 3% fab, and just scoop them all up. That's what he did extremely well at, and that's what built his team into a literal one-year monster that he can potentially roll into 2 or 3 years, depending on how long some of these guys last for. I mean, Bucky Irving, David Montgomery probably aren't going to break down immediately. James Conner, like we've been projecting him to break down, but he hasn't yet. Jaylen Warren probably won't be any different next year compared to now. Same with Javonte Williams. Like, you look at this team as like, it could still be a problem next year. Because he's got a 38% chance to win this year. Like, a team that's that dominant, and by my simulator, he's projected to get 3 more wins than literally everyone else. Well, his team can regress a little bit and still be the top team in the league next year. At the very least, it'll be number 2 or number 3. And so that's something that you can roll through multiple years with, even though the team looks like, man, I don't understand how this is going to work. And to me, that's what makes best ball a ton of fun. It's way different style of play and of thinking than lineup leagues. And what you need to do is just embrace that. Embrace that. It's hard for everyone else to do that too. It's hard for anyone. Like, in my case, I needed to not bid on those players that I bid on. I spent way too much money early. I was like, you know what? I already got myself one top tier wide receiver. I need to protect that investment by making sure I get the second one because I think he's also going cheap. Well, guess what? I now ended up spending so much of my money on those guys that I didn't have any for the rest of the players to fill out my team. So that's the importance of depth in best ball. And once you're at the point now where I need to get more depth, it's hard to do it because everyone knows that I need depth, and they know that depth is king in best ball too. So it's hard to tear down from assets unless you're tearing down a lot. You're tearing down into ranges that you are uncomfortable. But if you are close enough to competing where that is an opportunity presented to you, oftentimes it actually is worth it. And it is something where you actually want to do that for your team. That's everything that I have for this week. Please do go check out the simulator that I have on southharmonff.com. And because I mentioned it, and I use it a decent amount, go check out Dynasty Daddy as well. It's an awesome tool, and I know that I said, hey, the playoff calculator, I think it's not properly accounting for this stuff. But I also know that the whole rest of the tool is something that is really, really impressive, and is something that if you are not currently using it, you absolutely need to put some of that into your repertoire because it just helps you organize, especially if you have a large portfolio. As always, make sure to stay sharp and keep grinding that edge. I'll see you next week.